This is Call with Dad's podcast, where today's issues, concerns, and joys of being a dad are discussed, with your hosts E.A. Maynard and Mr. Pancake sharing their views, experiences, and all things they know. Join the journey with us. Welcome to Call with Dads, more than a podcast or a website, but your home for a community of dads who want to be better. Now let's get started.
So let's get this started. Scott, you and I have talked before, obviously, and we've talked on my prior show that I had, and the one thing I felt is your book that talked about rewiring the brain, what you had to do with your son and yourself and the things that you found, seems so, you write everything in a sense for business manners, this and that, but I see such a powerful use of it in for fathers in general as well, because a lot of dads feel like we have the weight of the world on our shoulders. The dads that feel like they're taking care of the kids, especially new dads and all this. And there's one thing you said that in one of your videos on your YouTube channel about dads not having, or how we grew into our mindsets and the scans. Well, how about this? Before I get way into all this, Scott, I appreciate you being here. Can you tell everybody a bit about yourself, who you are, and why you're here to talk about?
Okay. Well, let's start with the important stuff, I guess. I've been married, actually September 12th, be 37 years. And I have two sons. One is 30 and one is 26. And that's the one thing is I don't think that there's anything that someone can tell you to get ready to being a parent because you know, my wife and I, we got a dog. And we thought, well, as long as we didn't kill that, we'd be pretty much ready, you know. So, but, I grew up in a smaller city, Newark, Ohio, and went to Ohio State, paid for all my degrees myself, undergrad, graduate school, law school, working during the day, working in factories and things like this. And so my wife and I got married in 87. She's an x-ray tech at Children's Hospital, been there 32 years. And in 1993, we had our first child, and that was Michael. Okay. And so everything actually for about three and a half years was great. He was very, very personable, very outgoing, fast on his feet, ran on the balls of his feet. He didn't sleep much. He was just so active all the time. And so a lot of nights, actually, my wife took the burden of it because I started law school in 92. He was born in 93, and I didn't graduate till 96. Oof. And so that makes things real wide awake, stuff like this. But we just figured he's very active. But then about four and a half, his whole personality changed. He became very withdrawn, became kind of clumsy on his feet, was not the same kid at all. And so that would have been in about 1998 in there somewhere, okay? And so we're like looking for all these answers and trying to find out what the heck is going on. So it took us a long time until about 2001 to get him diagnosed. And of course, you got to think this is in the early days of what they called Asperger's autism. Mm-hmm. And so a psychologist actually said, well, he's autistic. He has this. And so they're like, okay, well, we better start learning about this. So we went to all these board certified psychologists, all these so-called experts and everything. And universally across the board, we were told, well, the biggest problem you've got is that this is a wiring issue in the brain. So if it was chemical or electrical, or if it was chemical, then we'd have more luck adjusting that. Okay. Cause we could adjust the medications, we could adjust chemical levels and things like that, but it's not. So you better just prepare yourself because this is just the way he's going to be. I mean, the coordination and everything. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is you know, terrible. So I started doing my own research, and for the next few years, started research and discovering. And interestingly enough, at that time, Scientific American even had it on its front cover about this huge battle between the neuroscientists and the neurologists, and of course the psychiatrists. Mm-hmm. Huge battle. Well, if you look at through history, going all the way back to Louis Pasteur, the scientists always win. Right. They're the ones with the lab coats. Those are the guys and gals at the cutting edge discovering things. Right. And we discovered that everything that they were telling us, everything they were telling us was wrong. You actually grow 100,000 new brain cells every month. And if you take good care of those, each one of those can grow 10 to 100 sprouts. So I started learning all this type of stuff. And then I also then at that same time learned about the Amen Clinic and Dr. Daniel Amen. Now, of course, you got to remember, this is like 23 years ago. Okay. So Dr. Amen was saying, no, we can go in with nuclear SPECT scans and actually watch somebody think. We can look at the blood flow. We can see where the brain is damaged. And depending on what part of the brain is damaged, that's the condition you're going to have. So I'm like, well, this makes a lot of sense. So we got in the car and I drove. We flew that time. We flew to Reston, Virginia, which is right outside of Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And we went in and got him scanned. And it was a mess. Just hot spots all over the brain. It was a mess. So they started telling us all this stuff. And it was just really interesting because they said, well, you can rewire the brain. And I'm like, and I started learning all this stuff about rewiring the brain. Did my own research online from places like, you know, UCLA, Cambridge, Vanderbilt, Oxford, places all over the world where the neuroscientists are learning, no, you can rewire the brain. You can make it better. Now, I want to make this very clear because people, when I start talking about how much his brain is rewired and mine as well, people say, well, you know, that's a cure. It's not a cure. There is no cure. Well, since there's no cure, but you can still improve the brain. I mean, you can make it work better. All right. So, and actually one of the things was really interesting. We've been bouncing around for years about his coordination and things like this. And they said, well, one of the treatments that you want to start looking at is the interactive metronome. I said, well, what's that? What's the interactive metronome? And they said, well, the interactive metronome is the same type of therapy they put stroke victims through. And half of all of your neurons are at the base of your skull in the back. Actually, that's where your eyes are connected. Okay, that's where most of your neurons are. So you can rewire that and make that more balanced and build up more neurons back there, because the interactive metronome is a lot like, if you ever saw the movie Big, and Tom Hanks jumps on the big piano keyboard thing on the floor, that's what it's like, except it's not that big. You'll put your feet on this thing, and then it'll wire you up for your coordination. You'll hear the beat, and you will clap your hands and stomp your feet on the beat. And what that does is over period of time, what it does is it builds up your coordination. And so his coordination actually was improved 600 to 700% from when he first started. So now think, we're paying $400 an hour, okay, cash to these pompous okay, who would not even listen to anything that had anything to do with a brain scan or rewiring the brain or how to feed the brain. So we were on our own. And so, so make a long story short, we got his brain scanned in 2006 and went back in 2008 to get a follow-up scan in August of 2008. We got him scanned originally in January of 2006, and then so about 2.5 years later, August of 2008, and his brain was about 15% improved. His coordination was better, a lot of improvements in his brain. So, okay, my wife said, as long as we're there, you're getting scanned. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I'm not getting scanned. We're here to get Michael scanned. She goes, no, you're getting scanned. You're nuts. You are nuts. And so I got my brain scanned, and oh, yeah, it was ravaged with PTSD. Now, I also don't want to leave people because, you know, we're just taking a short period of time looking at this. There's also 6 hours of intake. Okay. Right. So it's not like scan your brain and say, oh, that's what you got. No, it doesn't work that way. What they do is, I had to answer about an hour's worth of questions. My wife had to answer about an hour's worth of questions. I had to answer this questionnaire. It took an hour. She had to do it. Then when we get there, there's another hour for each of us. And that's on top of the analysis. Yeah, so it is by far the most thorough exam I've ever been through. But we had this intake. My brain was a mess. And I can tell you, when you see how bad your brain really is, it's amazing. So that means you're not going to be a good person. You're not going to be a good parent. You're not going to be a good anything. And later I discovered that, oh my gosh, like 30% of everybody who you know out there is walking around with PTSD. Mm-hmm. It is epidemic in today's society. So I've learned so much about the brain, which I use all the time to, you know, try to improve it. Michael and I actually drove back in the middle of COVID in August of 2020 and had a follow-up scan. My brain is about 85% better.
All right.
The OCD is completely gone. A lot of the hot spots are completely gone. His is about 75% better. Okay, so this is where it's amazing. People listen to this for their own perceptions, and I get attacked all the time. It's like, are you saying there's a cure for autism? I never said that. That's what you heard, which is really sad, okay, mm-hmm. because that's perceived. No, I'm saying that he can function so much better in social situations. In his mid-20s, I took him to Chicago to go work on his master's degree in psychology and just left him right in the middle of Chicago, you know, at Roosevelt University by the Buckingham Fountain.
Okay.
And he thrived. Oh, loved it. He would move back to Chicago in a minute. Now, picture taking somebody with Asperger's autism and just dropping them in the middle of the nation's third largest city and just leaving them. So, yeah, it's a huge improvement. And so, you know, and honestly, it's like, okay, you've got this thing you're dealing with. There's a lot of parents that are dealing with things that there is no improvement. There is nothing. So I don't think there's any such thing as somebody having kids and not having something throw at your head. And you have to deal with it. You have to, and sometimes there is no dealing with it. There is no answer. So that's what, and that's what we put into the book, Healing the Human Brain, is my story. And I use that with my clients and myself all the time. And it has Michael's story in there. Mm-hmm. So it's always trying to find out what are the answers. And I think I was just too stupid to think that, you know, that they were right, that the psychologists and psychiatrists were right. And they weren't right. They were wrong.
You know, the funny thing about all that is I remember, like I said, you and I have talked, for people that don't know, you and I have talked prior, and my son, he ended up getting speech delay. He was on the path of speaking properly, and then just after a month at a certain daycare, we got bid multiple times. I think it was 5 or 6 times in 1 month. Then he just kind of shut off and stopped talking. Well, I correlated that together, but he ended up stopped talking and stopped progression in his speech, but he was very smart in a lot of things. And, you know, the funny thing is I remember talking with you, and it was probably, maybe 2 years ago or something like that, where they started trying to tell me that my son had autism, that he was on the spectrum and all this. We put him in the public school system, which was a valuable lesson to me of how bad the public school is. And so I will never say anything good about the public school at this point, other than they are good at taking and throwing away money.
I can say one thing good about it. My kid doesn't go there.
Yeah.
Neither does mine. But
No, that's an interesting point, because we're not Catholic, but we life-flighted both of my boys out of the public schools here in the suburbs, and it was one of the best things we ever did. They are more concerned as to what your test scores are than whether or not the kids go home alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's deplorable. I mean, honestly, enough that it makes you just want to go in there and just start cracking heads of these administrators, because they're just. I don't want to speak for other districts, but our district in particular, I can tell you. At that time, just a bunch of overeducated idiots. Dumb, stupid things. And honestly, the mental disorders and the suicides are, they're more has a freaking peanut in the school than a gun.
Right.
And, or these other types of things that are going to, honestly, if you bully somebody, you'll get away with it.
Mm-hmm. That's what
it's not a problem. But you put a peanut sandwich in there, boy, you're going to jail.
Oh yeah. Well, here's what I find funny
that's
is
ridiculous.
I homeschool my son now, and the public school wanted to put him in a special education class where he would be in a class full of kids screaming and all this. We said no. We decided to homeschool and all this. And the funny thing is shortly after we got him out of the public school system where there was the early Head Start classes that they offer here in Virginia, he started improving. We got him out of there. He started improving. Now people meet him and they're like, well, your son is overly smart. And because he's tall as his age, everyone's like, oh, what is he, third, second grade, something like that. I'm like, and usually I'm like, no, he's kindergarten. Now he's first grade. And he's just starting first grade age. He's doing third grade science, second grade reading. And the only reading he's doing, he reads at a higher level, but his schoolwork is second grade because he still has to learn a few things, obviously.
Yeah.
But the fact is like when you and I talked, I thought about the fact of you saying, you know, rewiring the brain, all this, there's more to it than just taking these people's opinions. And my wife and I talked and I'm like, you know, I remember talking with this guy. He said that his kid had issues and that he didn't go with the first person's opinion. We started seeing that my son showed improvement. I'm like, you know, I don't think we need to put him into anything special. So we homeschooled, and like I said, we went off, and now he spends 2 or 3 hours a day with structural education. The rest of the time is just learning on his own, exploring nature, all this stuff. And he is, sometimes I'm sitting there going, stop talking, which is bad to say, but I mean, when you're trying to get him to bed, you want him to stop talking, obviously, but I mean, that thought of
to have.
Yeah, but it's fantastic he's talking, but it's amazing that our conversation before actually helped me realize it played a part in it. So it was kind of I'm not going to take the public school's opinion because I haven't heard anything about them positive. Everything I saw about them in our experience was negative. And, you know, I'm a big, I hate to say this, and I have people that we consider family that are gay, but you would never know they're gay because they don't talk about it. The public schools here, and you know, we love them to death. My kids will sit on their laps, hug them, has taken naps on them. So, but my only problem is like in the public schools, they almost push it. And like you said, overeducated idiots that are more focused about test scores, and from what I understand anymore, graduating kids can barely read at a seventh grade level, I think is the last I heard. Maybe it's gone up to an eighth.
Yeah. No, it's pathetic. It's you know, a couple things to think about. One of them is, and I heard this expression years ago, and I think it's just perfect. They refer to the brain as the Play-Doh in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I think that's just the perfect phrase for it because we call it plasticity. But the environment that you subject anyone to, whether it's an adult or especially a child, I mean that the brain is still forming for girls, for females, until about 26 years old. For boys, now it's up to 28. And I will tell you, the way that our society is interacting with our brains is with all the technology. It makes the brain lazy.
Mm-hmm.
The iPhones and iPads, that is pushing the formation of the frontal lobes another year or two out. It's taking longer because we're not challenging the brain. But taking your son, from just what I've learned from our experiences, you know, in putting them in a safe environment, well, now the brain is free to grow and to flourish and to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to learn. You're not going to thrive in an environment where you're in fight or flight.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And the other things that I've learned in the last few years is that, you know, we just talk about being able to learn and feeding the brain and everything. The number one threat to your health above everything else, and this is just what I've learned, research it yourself, is inflammation. Number one. The constant distress to your body that we go through at work, and think about what your kids would go through at school, is actually 40% worse than smoking. Mm-hmm. It will kill you faster. And people forget, like if you get a cold or a flu or COVID, all of the, you know, little T cells for your immune system will come out and start, you know, whoop, you know, eating up all the pathogens. Mm-hmm. But we have another immune system. If you twist your ankle, it's going to swell.
Right.
Well,
right.
When you're flooding your body with all this adrenaline and cortisol, your whole body is inflamed. That's why people often will get a rash or they'll lose their hair when they're under stress. The entire body is inflamed. So it cuts off the hair follicle and your hair falls out. It also enlarges your heart. And now we've discovered it not only exacerbates diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis, but it can give you rheumatoid arthritis and all these other things. And this constant flooding of cortisol causes Alzheimer's cells to grow.
Oh,
yeah.
It is the worst thing. So, great. My kid, and I'll tell you, today, second leading cause of death for kids under the age of 30 is suicide. So, great. My kid graduated summa cum laude, got his PhD, and killed himself at the age of 27. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Isn't that right. Yeah. And I will tell you, in speaking with the Amen Clinics, and it's really kind of funny because I've gotten so into it. I got certified by the Amen Clinics to counsel people and to talk to people about this. And so I send my clients now and they get like a 10% discount. So that's pretty good. Like I didn't get that when I was doing them, you know, but no, it is absolutely amazing when I talk to them. Oh yeah. So much childhood trauma is really coming back to haunt us because the environment you subject that child to, it goes back so far that, you know, we're just sponges. Let me just ask you, have you ever slept in the fetal position or semi-fetal?
I don't, if I
in
have.
In fear or out of lung?
I know. Oh, right, yeah. Well, people right away is like, oh, yeah, I've raised my knee up or my both knees up. Yeah, where'd you get that idea?
Right.
Babies bind themselves psychologically to, they wire themselves to the culture they're exposed to by the age of 9 months. So it's like, oh, yeah, before that baby's born, and those first few months and first few years are so critical. And so we're talking about education, and we're talking about a safe environment. And now we're talking that in, like, I think it's in Columbus schools. I don't know. Don't quote me. I have to research again. A third of all the kids get their primary meal at school.
Yeah, I've heard something about a lot of public schools being that way.
Yeah, well, in Reynoldsburg a couple years ago, we left the school program open. I don't know what they did this year, but they left the school program open for lunches throughout the summer. Otherwise, these kids weren't going to have a decent meal throughout the day. So here we are talking about parenting and everything. Notice when you go by the food lines, the open, you know, markets where they will distribute food, the food pantries, how many cars there are. And they're always station wagons and minivans, and there's always kids in there. So yeah, you start parenting the minute that kid is conceived, and you got to start thinking, particularly at minus 3 months, that kid can hear, that kid can experience what the mother's experiencing, what you're experiencing, and those first few months, and from then on, it's all critical. And then we're going to send them into a battle zone where we don't care about bullying. And I had one teacher here in Reynoldsburg, which, who be retired. The greatest of mankind would be his retirement. Now, understand, too, when you have speech issues or if you have autism or if you have any of these types of things, you're protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act. And there's a bunch of other laws that protect you in the schools. I had this teacher lean across at me. I'm an employment attorney, a civil rights attorney, say, no one's going to tell me how I'm going to run my classroom. Okay, first of all, you're talking to somebody who really could, okay, and I'm pissed, okay, I like heads, okay, but I need to turn my energy somewhere else, and so we sent a MASH helicopter and life-flighted both the boys out of these schools and took them to Catholic school, and I will tell you, great education, there was no bullying, I will tell you right now, now, you also, you know, they their job is to scare the hell out of you. Okay, that's what their job is, okay? But I will tell you, I think that's one of the best decisions we ever made was getting out of those public schools. Now, if you live in a place where there's public schools and they are actually caring about the kid, you know, more about the kid than the test scores, great, wonderful.
Yeah.
We didn't have that.
No, not around here either. Now, here's another thing that, and Mr. Pancake might jump in a bit more on this, but like I said, I was listening to your YouTube, and one thing that really dawned on me is you were talking about how after you got scanned, you realized your brain was lit up, and you weren't born that way. Like, your son was born with the inflamed or the red all over his head, and you had to work at fixing your brain. And it sounded like you were kind of a more angry person beforehand and all this. I'm not, I don't think you said you're like just raging all the time. But one thing that men do tend to have is an issue with if something doesn't go right or whatever it is, they get angry. I'll admit it. I've had my moments where I'm just like, for an example, right now I'm running on maybe 2 or 3 hours of sleep. I'm not supposed to be drinking as much coffee as I am, but the fact is if I don't, I'm going to be asleep. And, you know, I know I have stuff to do. And literally, I have to bite my tongue. Like, I was on a meeting earlier. I bit my tongue and kept my mouth shut. But at the same time, I'm sitting there thinking, you SOB, you know?
Yeah.
So there's always circumstances that we're going to get upset. My younger years, I used to be a very angry person. It wouldn't take much to light my fuse.
Yeah.
I've learned to control my anger. Now, other people, they have to do things to calm themselves down. They have, like, severe PTSD. They have... Mine was... I have no idea where mine came from, but what is it that...
mine came from.
Well... you thank Uncle Sam for that, but
God, you have that.
Yeah. I was in the military for a long time, and I was in the government for a long time, and I'm still for the government. That's why nobody could see me. But I wasn't in situations of conventional war where I wasn't like, you know, don't do that. Well, none of that crap. You know what I mean? So. That's your normal conventional war, your Army Ranger in Iraq and stuff like that. Yeah, good. I praise those guys, love them to death. But I was involved in a little bit more darker situations, and I mean I've been beaten within an inch of my life, you know. So, and I've gone to several hospitals. I've been held prisoner several times, stuff like that. So that those kind of situations have caused me to have severe damage in my brain.
Because of that,
I've had to go through like many different ways of like therapy, stuff like that. Many bad therapies, you know, the government, all the money in the world and research in the world, they are not the best at therapy. You think they would, all the years of research through PTSD and brain injuries, you think they would have learned how to kind of solve it or at least better it somewhat, but they make it worse. So, I mean, all those movies you see where they strap in like a prisoner in the chair and they put the thing in their eye and they force them. They didn't actually do that to me, but you know, they do kind of stuff like that where they force you to revisit and relive the situations over and over and over until it's no longer there, until it's numb. And that in turn, long terms can be worse in the situation. So I was listening to you talk about rewiring the brain. That kind of, a lot of that stuff makes sense. You know, I want to actually learn about a little bit more of it because I know a lot of my problems over the years, I've kind of learned how to do it myself and learned how to kind of adjust things accordingly and rewire my own brain. And one of those was learning new things. I mean, trying to teach myself something new, such as the website, you know, such as social media. The whole Pancakes with Your Dad thing started from, you know, basically this whole scenario. I wanted to learn more about being a dad. I wanted to learn more about parenting, you know, stuff like that. So that's kind of what sparked it. And then a little bit of it grew and grew and grew and just turned into more and more. So using education on myself kind of helped manage that. And then over time, I kind of went to civilian therapies and other things and did other stuff as well. And it has actually brought me down a lot. I do see the effects of it on my daughter, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
It's catchy. And, it is contagious. Yeah.
We are learning to deal with it now. My wife does have issues of her own. They're non-military related. So the two of us together combined is probably not the best combination for parenting. But
honestly, that's the norm.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting better. Our daughter, she's never been diagnosed with anything. She does not have autism. You know what I mean? That's far from it. Yeah. You know, far from it. But she does have like really bad ADHD. Okay. And she has things that like, she goes to a private school and it's like a Christian Latin based private school where it's the Latin classical education. A lot of it's based on old school Latin and classic information like that. So the school though operates similar to like a collective homeschool, I guess. So they don't take any money from anybody other than the people whose students go to the school. So through tuitions, clothing sales, after school things like soccer sales, you know, stuff like that, money from that stuff. And that's what funds it all. So it's essentially, I guess, like a giant co-op or collective that created their own individual school. Their curriculum's awesome. But when she goes to school from end to end, she's amazing. They love her to death. She's so awesome. Prior to school, just getting her to like do something simple like eat breakfast. You know what I mean? It's like a nightmare. And then after school, as soon as she gets off, she immediately reverts back to being a nightmare. She's like, it's like nightmare. Wonderful girl all through school. And then as soon as she gets home, she's like, okay, for like 10 minutes and then boom, nightmare again. And we're like, what is going on? So some of the things we've noticed, like TV or any type of electronics, the more we limit it, the better.
Okay.
But we try not to like completely just be like, no TV, you know, we're only candle lights, no electricity whatsoever. You know what I mean?
Right, we
try to avoid that 100, you know, so it's not so bad, but I mean, we still let her watch a kid show now and again, but the more we allow her to be on TV, the worse it gets, you know what I mean? Because we can literally like put the TV on. I can be like, hey, honey, hey, 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 come on, hey. And she's like,
yeah,
you know, so we got to pull that off. And that's one thing she has, I think probably due to the ADHD, she has that connection to whatever that chemical is when you get instant gratification, stuff like that. Okay. So as soon as we separate the TV from her, so if we can't get her attention, I mean, there's nothing to do. I can't just go. It's like getting a pole and smacking somebody off of an electrical wire. You know what I mean? I literally have to go snatch the cable out of the TV. And or just go snatch the remote and plug it and turn it off. You know what I mean? And then as soon as that happens, it's oh man, it's full blown like rah!
Yeah.
And it's like man. So that's I try to limit it. So we have to figure out ways to kind of rewire that to where she can learn to focus, but also let go and stuff like that. I don't know.
Well, how old is she?
Interesting. 5. She'll be 6 in December.
Okay. Well, a couple things. One is, every parent seems to think they're dysfunctional, and chances are really good that that's the norm right in there.
Because,
say, just a general stat, 70 to 80% of everybody you bump into who has prescription drug medications is enormous. And that really spiked after and during COVID. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and the truth of the matter is there's a couple things. I don't poo-poo psychiatric medications at all. Actually, if you can get on the right ones, more power to you. That is exactly fantastic. Right. But the problem you get into is that I don't run into too many. Actually, I've never run into any. I've heard of other psychiatrists who will give psychiatric medications to their patients. Okay. Mm. And understand, there's like 30 different types of antidepressants. Yeah. There are actually 6 or 7 different types of depression in the brain. So, and our metabolisms are different. So really, in all fairness to the psychiatrist, what are the chances that they're going to pick the right dosage, the right one for you and hit it?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so, right in the mind. Think it's something that's working halfway decent. But here's the problem. If you had a heart attack, your doctor would give you pills for your heart. Cardiologists do that.
Right.
All doctors do that. Okay. So they give you pills and everything. That's great. But your doctor would also talk to you about reducing your stress, eating right, you know, hobbies, all these other things that are good for your heart. I personally have never run into a psychiatrist who does that, and that should be required. That should be something that happens every single time. So when we talk about I've got this or my wife has that, or that's actually the norm. And the thing is if we all learn about how our brain works and what is good for it, which basically it's not that tough. Whatever's good for your heart is good for your brain. Okay, they really are, you know, in the same boat together. The problem is your heart won't heal itself. Your brain will. Okay, so we want to create these environments that are as safe as possible for the kids. And I've learned more of this in the last 10, 15 years than I've known the rest of my life. But at the same time, think about this. Well, my kid is watching this TV and everything. Okay, so, you know, think about it. We're parents, okay? We know that too much time on the phone, too much time on the video stuff and everything is just going to use up their brain. We just instinctively know this. Okay. Yeah. Well, when you go to sleep at night, it's a good thing for parents to know. That's why sleep is so important. In the year 1900, we averaged 9-8 hours of sleep a night. Today, we're averaging 6.
Yeah.
Okay. So that reduces the blood flow to your brain. It just harms it all the way around. But on top of that, when you sleep at night, that's when, I'll use real fun terms here, that's when your gas tanks get refilled. Your neurotransmitters. And it's easier to stick to your diet in the morning and afternoon than the evening.
Yeah.
Because, one reason is you're using up more and more of your neurotransmitters. And as you go throughout the day and you use up more and more of that gasoline, you run low. Well, think about this. My kid's going to come home. I'm going to let the kid watch 2 hours of videos or something like this, then do their homework. What's left?
Yeah.
What's left?
Nothing.
Okay, I mean, So the frontal lobes are going to shut down. That's what shuts down first. So there's not as much control for the child. Mm-hmm. And I always love this. Well, kids are little adults. No, they're not. They're children. No, they're not. They're children. And
right.
So what you're instinctively discovering is probably absolutely. So you're true. So you learn these little tricks. But I tell you one thing. I think it's just really critical that parents learn how the brain works for themselves, but also for their children. And those safe environments that, no, you do your homework first. Why? Because you're not going to use up all your gas, on the cell phone or something. And there's this, actually, how dangerous this can be for our kids is Dr. Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, out of New York University, published a study that correlates directly, that the iPhone correlates directly with the rise of teenage suicides.
I believe it.
Yeah,
I believe it with that connection to that stuff, you know. So my daughter being 5, I mean, she has homework, but it's not really homework. It's just kind of something they give to her to do just to practice a little bit of handwriting and stuff. Because, I mean, ultimately speaking, it is based around, you know, Latin and grammar. So it's kind of their centralized idea for the school. So she goes home with, I mean, it's one sheet of paper, and she's got to write her letters like 4 or 5 times throughout the course of a week. You know what I mean? So it's not like they give her hours. And I personally have viewed her do an entire line in less than a minute and with perfect penmanship at 5 years old. You know what I mean? So I know she can do it. I guess what I'm asking is with your like expertise, what do you think? Do you think from school, finish that line and then fun and play, or from school, fun and play, do stuff before bed, or should I drop it somewhere in the middle? You know, what do you think?
Well, with my own personal opinion is, I don't want to use up all the neurotransmitters, but when we say play, to me, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to go play. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to go ride my bike. I'm going to go shoot some hoops. I'm going to go play with the dog. Great. Knock yourself out. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's get your whole blood flow going. Those are good eustress chemicals, which are a bunch of great chemicals in your body.
Right.
Knock yourself out. Okay. Yeah, that's great. I'm going to go sit and watch video games. That's not what we want right now. Okay. So, I want you to do your homework before you do the video games, before you're watching TV, because it does those neurotransmitters. It uses up your focus and your electricity. There's only so much electricity that you're going to have, and you just get dim-witted. Okay. I was always very lucky. I'll take it for luck. Whenever I got tired, I got a headache.
Yeah.
I've never pulled an all-nighter. Never. Never done that because I can't. I got to get stuff done first. Okay. But at this stage, if she's going to go and do some active things, oh, knock yourself out. But I personally, just thinking about how the brain works, with our boys, it was like, okay. And of course, they try to sneak stuff. And it's like, okay, I'm going to go do my homework. And okay, so they go to their room. You don't know what they're doing. Okay. So it's like, yeah, I guess I could disconnect the Wi-Fi. I don't even know today. You don't go to the library anymore. All this stuff is online. My youngest son is at Ohio University right now. He's studying to be a physical therapist. And it's really funny. He goes, well, I got my books. Well, they're all digital. Okay. They're all down. Yeah. So it's like, it is challenging now than ever before. But I get this advice right from Dr. Daniel Amen, who he had a young daughter later in life. And he said, oh, no, he said, we play the game all the time as to what's good for your brain and what isn't good for your brain.
Yeah.
So he's teaching his. I'm like, I wish I'd have known that back 30 years ago and 25 years ago. It's because I would have done that. That's a great game. Is this good or is this bad? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, getting the child, getting the person all the way through life and understand. People of my generation understand the stuff we're talking about right now, just to give you an idea how recent this stuff is, a guy by the name of Dr. Joseph Ledoux, he's easy to Google. He comes right up on all these brain books and everything, just a brilliant guy. He discovered where our fight or flight system is. It's our amygdalas, two little balls that sit behind our eyeballs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sit right behind our eyeballs. That's our fight or flight system. He discovered those in 1992. Took another 8, 9, 10 years to figure out exactly what these things did. Now, think about it. We've known about fight or flight our whole lives, and you'd ask your doctor, well, where's my fight or flight system? Oh, it's in there next to your soul. It's in there somewhere, And
I always thought it was that pituitary gland or watch Adam Sandler movies. It's the medulla oblongata.
That's your fountain. But sitting right there with your emotional system in the center of your brain, it looks like the Starship Enterprise. With the two little engines coming out, and that's how I describe it, at the ends of those engines are your amygdalas. But just think about that. It's like the year 2000, 2001, 1999, in that area right there before we even fully understood what they did. See how recent this stuff is that we're learning here. And that's why the board-certified psychologists and psychiatrists that I went to in the early 2000s, they didn't know this stuff. Just because he didn't study it in school. Now the curriculum is completely different. And I don't know if you've noticed, like every city I go to, now there are these huge buildings that are dedicated to neurology.
Yeah.
Huge buildings. They got their own buildings now because of strokes and neurological disorders and all these things. So a parent has absolutely positively got to take care of their brain. You really do, or you're just going to stink at it. And think of it this way. A damaged brain means for most people like me, we flooded it and damaged it with what we experienced. And so you got to think, how am I going to heal that? I mean, literally, my brain scan was like a bright red all over the place. Now it's mostly nice and cool blue. So somebody says, well, I just can't control myself. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's like walking with a broken leg.
Yeah.
It's like stuff on mental health that just drives me crazy. Well, we're going to talk about mental health. Okay, that's wonderful. Rarely do I ever hear someone talk about the brain. So this is like going to the doctor with a broken ankle and saying, oh, it really hurts. My ankle hurts. Oh, okay, well, here, I'm going to give you a bunch of Vicodin. That'll make it feel better. Well, I think you ought to x-ray
for a little while.
So, yeah, for a little while, and that's what happens. If you walk on it and make it worse, that's what happens with brains. And so I'm very, very aware that You know, what do I eat? How much water do I drink? Mm-hmm. Get as many jackasses out of my life as humanly possible. And you know, all of these types of things, because the better that I am at that, and these are lifelong struggles. It's not like you cross the finish line and get to spike the ball. But these are lifelong things that you have to do. And that's what you've got to do to create that type of environment for your child. And it's easier to control yourself. But being human, we are hardwired to run away and kill each other. That's, I always love this because I love to watch documentaries. And I saw this one on the Neanderthals. And I was taught in school that the Neanderthals died out and all this other stuff. And there's I can't remember his exact education, but he said, they didn't die out. We killed them. We killed them. What do you think a human does when you want somebody else's land? You kill them, you kill man. Them. Ergo, Ukraine. Right.
My my wife did 23andMe a while back because she was adopted. You know, she was adopted from birth basically. So she was about like 3 or 4 months old. And she was born in Korea. Her parents are Korean. And she was adopted and brought to the United States almost immediately. So like 2 or 3 months old, something like that, 3 or 4 months, in that range. Her parents, her whole family is white, you know what I mean? And she's the odd one out. She's a Korean. But she has never met anybody or any DNA of her own. She's recently kind of had some interest in kind of figuring that stuff out and get just maybe potentially even knowing them, just because now we have a kid and a family, you know, it'd be nice to at least know that information. So she reached out, but aside from that, prior to that, when me and her first started dating and got married and looking into having a kid, one of the things she wanted to do was get her medical records or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you know the history of your medical, you know what I mean, are you prone to cancer or whatever the case is, without having any idea or connection to your prior family? And if anybody knows anything about the Korean government, not the North Korean, the South Korean, they don't like, you know, just as bad as the North Korean government is, the South Korean government has some very socialist style communist policies that are still in place from years ago. So they don't share information like that, like they do, like we do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if we go ask them, they're like, no, so there's nothing we can do about it. So she did the 23andMe. It brought up a lot of stuff. It pulled a lot of medical history. And it's funny, she has actually a few DNA-related people here in the United States. They're all the same scenario, you know, from years and years ago. She was adopted and brought to the United States, and whoever else she had, like, I mean, their DNA connection is probably like 10%, you know what I mean, or 5%, but it's still there.
Yeah.
So we did that to kind of figure that stuff out. And the reason I was saying all this is because her DNA, she gets a ping every so often with a new discovery, I guess, on her DNA. She was like, it's like 3% Neanderthal.
Yeah, there's a lot of things out there like that.
I was making fun of her last night. I was like, you're gonna go reinvent the wheel? She's like, shut up.
Yeah. It's a tough thing. Brain health is a huge issue for parents and for children today. And, you know, you got to figure out for yourself, you know, whether things you like to. That's why, you know, on my website, that's why I post it for free. This stuff is, I think, too important to charge anybody for. If you just go to scottwarrick.com and in the upper right corner, hit free resources and go to Lunch and Learns. It's all free. All the stuff on brain health, how you damage your brain, how you heal it. And those are great, great. One of the best things for Michael, I think, was, you know, him learning more and more about what to eat, his diet, and the interactive metronome got him his coordination back. So he ran long distance track in high school. And I have pictures of him as a freshman with this little baby face and things like this. And by the time he graduated, I have a picture of him running, just looks like a marble statue of David, running.
Right.
And he actually, every year, the state of Ohio, it's called the most board, and it's for the student who overcomes a disability to participate in varsity sports. And Michael won that for 2012.
Okay, cool. Yeah. What was the name of that again?
The most courageous student award.
Okay.
And it's the Ohio High School Athletic Association. So, he won it in 2012, and it just shows that, you know, and he and I make a good comparison. He was born that way. I developed it. Right. So, you know, people can, you choose, for the most part, you choose to be who you are. And people say, well, that's just how I am. So, you know, I do a lot of coaching with people, and if I have to coach you, I'm about to get fired. Usually, standing between you and the door, and I always have a talk with folks about their brain health, and I will tell you, this stuff does. It permeates throughout the entire family.
Yeah.
So it's very, very critical.
I found a lot about food kind of does have a, it plays a huge part in that. Oddly, you know, it's weird. I know, like, how you were talking about the inflammation and stuff earlier, how big of a problem it is and a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that causes, you know, aside from stress, because, that is a big problem, and it does cause it. But if you eat chips constantly and you eat tons of processed food with all these different funny oils, I mean, you're going to have all kinds of inflammation in your intestines and everywhere else as well. So, I mean, so you're double timing it. You're getting it from here and there. So you're just, like, overhauling your body. And people wonder why they're 35 and, like, you know, 5'2" and 350 pounds, you know. I see, like, and a majority of the time it's like women, you know, they get like real chubby and fat in their 30s, and then their skin's like so negative white, but they get moles and pimples all over the place. And like, that's not a thing that's natural. I mean, having moles and freckles is fine, but when you have such an abundance of them and you're like almost like troll looking, like that's from food. That's from sugar and oils and processes. And
it could be toxins. I mean, you remember during COVID, and I can't remember what city it was. It was in India, and they showed what a normal city day looked like. And you couldn't even see the sunset.
Yeah.
You couldn't even
right.
see through it. And then they showed it in the middle of COVID. It was so crystal clear.
It was like clear.
Everything you breathe in, anything that gets in your blood basically injected or something like this, fight or flight and all that, 20% goes to your brain. Now, the best thing you can give your kids, I think, is a healthy brain.
Mm-hmm.
Ways to take care of it, because bad things are going to happen.
Right.
You just got to be ready. You know. So no, it's.
But yeah,
it's,
I was gonna ask you in the beginning when we first got on. You were talking about how the first like couple of years, your son seemed fairly normal. You know, and then around that 4 age, something kind of went like that.
Right.
I mean, I don't know much about it to say I'm this or that, you know what I mean? But what are your thoughts on going, you know, because they have the vaccine schedules, you know, did that line up with it? And if so, like, what do you think about that even being part of it or connecting to it?
Well, we don't see any real correlation between the vaccines because they have changed the vaccines, and what they were complaining about in the vaccines isn't there anymore. It's the preservatives, and we still have this explosion of autism. So no, I don't. And
so that's not a connection thing to it.
Not that I think.
I hear so much about it, so I just was curious. I have no idea.
I don't see anything there, but what I've had explained to me, which does make sense, because as you get old, the brain waves change. Okay, so they get faster. Your first few years are almost like in a dream state. Actually, when you're born, you don't even have, in the side of your brain here, you've got your hippocampus, which is your short-term memory. You don't have that.
Hmm.
It's like little kids. They don't have kneecaps either.
Right, okay, they have kneecaps.
Right, you grow those in later, and that's the same thing with your hippocampus. You're going to grow in your short-term memory later. Well, so what's happening? Well, they just are going on habit and stuff like this. But as the kid gets older, they grow in their short-term memory, which then goes to cognitive memories, which then moves into speeding up their brain waves, and they are more aware. It's like if you go into a room of toddlers and you step on one of them and one cries, okay?
The other ones are like
they all
no idea.
They think it's them. Yeah. They don't recognize that they're separate from the rest of the world. And so as you get older, you become self-aware and you start to realize that you are separate from the world. And so a lot of these things that were ticking in his brain then came out that, oh my God, everybody's looking at me. I'm going to withdraw. And so a lot of this came about.
Yeah. Okay. So such as like awareness and stuff like that. Yeah.
That was and that seems to make the most sense to me. That's what I'm hearing from the neuroscientists. And and I'm really biased now. I go to what the scientists are saying because the practitioners, scientists always come up with it first. Mm-hmm. Okay. X-rays. Well, a practitioner didn't come up with an X-ray.
Right. Scientist.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so that's the way things always work. So I like to go to Scientific American. I like to go to the researchers. A lot of colleges and universities have done some amazing studies on this type of stuff. That one seems to be a pretty logical theory. But the truth of the matter is, we just don't know what is doing it. But it is epidemic. It's epidemic. Yeah. So, yeah, every time I do a program. I do a lot of training on this stuff, and actually I just got back from Florida at a conference where I did some of this training. I did a few different types of things, but we talked about this, and I'll ask how many people in the room know somebody with autism. Oh, it's half the room every single time.
Of people at least know one person.
You know, here's and I'm sorry to interrupt, but here's the one thing that always throws me is, you know, like when I mentioned before about they say my son was on the spectrum, the public school, this and that. And, you know, it might just be me, but when I was talking with them, they were listing off all the symptoms that put somebody on a spectrum. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, my God, that means everybody in the world is on the autistic spectrum.
Because,
so, I mean, it's, I'm not saying that everybody that says they're autistic is not autistic. But it does seem that, because I remember that people were saying, oh, my kid's autistic, and their kids showed no sign of it. I'm sitting there going, you know, I've seen autistic kids.
Yeah.
But it's like,
essentially, a lot of it's come like a fad, and almost as a lot of doctors. And I don't take away from a lot of doctors' credibility and stuff like that, and a lot of people that are, you know, where their kids or even adults or whatever are autistic. I don't want to ever take away from somebody who actually is, but I do feel as though a lot of doctors are like, oh yeah, autistic, sure, you know, just push it and try and make somebody something that they're not. And I don't know if it's like a money thing or maybe they get more medication or whatever the case is. I have no idea. I kind of feel probably money, because money is king. You know, cash is king and always will be. But I do feel like there is a little bit more of that. Well, a lot more of that today than there was in the original days of autistic kids when they first started coming around. And the idea, or us, I guess us just more so discovering that it exists. But I do feel like it's more prevalent where, because, I mean, they even questioned my kid, you know, just because she has, you know, a little bit more of ADHD, a little bit more sped up in the mind, stuff like that. And I can tell you, she's not autistic. You know, I in a way, I do feel like where they got the spectrum, you know, somebody's all, there's all different which ways.
Right.
But I also see, like, you know, there may be a level of or a spectrum sort of autism, but there is still a line. You know what I mean? This person, you can't just say this person's autistic because you feel as though that they're just mildly socially unacceptable. You know what I mean? So they're not autistic. There's a line, and they got to cross that line in order to be autistic. So I just see it more so today.
I'd want someone, you know, that's one thing too, is we've learned so much more about it. We don't know the cause, but we've learned so much more about it. And I'll tell you, it takes an awful lot of observation. And first of all, I would want the advice of, I would want to learn as much as I could about it. All right. Mm-hmm. And then your observations as a parent or somebody, well, like when you go to the Amen clinics, you will complete a questionnaire. That's an hour. You'll answer their questions for an hour, but they also want somebody who is very close to you, that is with you a lot and knows you, because they have a different perspective. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so it's everyone's different perspective, and that is so true. It's the way we see the world. Well, that's why magicians have a profession. Mm-hmm. We see what we expect to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, you know, so doctors are trained in certain things, and that's why you always hear these stories where a doctor misses a diagnosis, and particularly with some new diagnosis. Well, why did they miss that? Because it's not what they were trained to look for. Okay, right. It's not what you're. No doctor was taught to look for a cause for suicide to be an iPhone.
Right.
How in God's name could that? Well, once you start looking into what's happening with the iPhone and how much time you're spending, okay, now the correlation. So now we have to statistically connect that core, and it's like, oh my God, yes, it bears out. And so what you're saying is absolutely true. It's so easy to put example, we who are classified in Ohio as legally blind and they're licensed to drive. So you see, well, you're legally blind. Yeah, but that doesn't mean that I can't see enough to do this. It means I fit this category. Okay.
Right.
It's like when you see somebody, it drives me crazy. You see somebody get out of their car and they park into a handicap spot. Okay. Yeah. And they get out. Car and they run inside and someone goes over there and keys their car or, you know, spits on their car or something. I was like, well, they look perfect. Okay, we're going to kick them in the shin and test it. Why don't you just go find out? Okay.
Right.
How do you know the person? Yeah, they could have a heart condition and they can't walk more than 20 feet. You don't know what's wrong with this person. Right. And, you know, disabilities come in all sizes.
Right.
And I'm telling you right now, the way that being an employment attorney, the way that the ADA was reformulated back in 2011, if you're over 40 and you don't qualify as being disabled, you're not trying. Mm-hmm. You're definitely not trying. You're the laziest 40-year-old on the planet because that is such a broad category. Well, autism has turned into that as well. My oldest son now, he is a behavioral technician. He's working with kids with autism. And some of these are nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
Some are violent, some are not. And so it's a catch-all. Actually, the term that we were given when Michael was diagnosed in 2001, which now it's almost 25 years ago, okay, thinking about this stuff, 2001, it was called Asperger's autism. And now they decided, oh, we're not going to call that that. Well, it doesn't make any freaking difference, okay? You can call measles this and you can call them whatever. It's still the same thing. And so, you know, you're hitting on a really good point. I don't want to just stop and put a label on some kid because it takes hours of and it's really interesting. You will read an awful lot about the psychological profiles of the presidential candidates.
Yeah,
and it's and I was reading an article on this by a neuroscientist. He does research. He says, oh, it's the most accurate diagnosis you can just about get because their life is an open book, and a psychiatrist, I've been to a lot of different psychiatrists before I went to the book. It's like, yeah, you could write a book on them. And it's like a big evaluation for me was like 3 hours. Oh, this is so thorough. Eamon Clint does 6.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's on top of what they are. See, if I give them an hour of intake, they're going to spend an hour examining it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fair to say there's 10 to 12 hours of intake plus your, that is what I've seen, one of the most thorough exams. Well, still 10 to 12 hours of intake. Oh my gosh, how much insight do you have into President Biden, into Kamala Harris? Because there's always someone on the inside that squeals. There's always someone on the inside that knows them. My sister has met Kamala Harris and some of these things. So if I'm going to sit down and have my child diagnosed by somebody, I will tell you, this sword swings both ways. I love the internet. I could not do what I do today if it wasn't for the internet.
Right.
If nothing else, my smart ass slides that I find to put some humor into my programs, that's what insomnia will do for you sometimes. But the thing is I hear, people poo-poo this and poo-poo. No, there are very reputable. I can tell you right now, something coming out of Vanderbilt University, read it. Something coming out of Scientific American. I subscribed to Journal of American Medical Association, and I was astonished to find out how many doctors, I haven't read it in years. I got a big bin over here. I got a big stack of it to look through. Okay, so you want to make your $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 or $600,000 a year, but you don't want to stay up on what's going on with neuroscience? Are you kidding me? Or the other sciences? Are you kidding me? Whatever decision comes out from the courts today, right now, as if Mike asks me a question about something, I'm expected to know what that decision is. The law changes in any respect to where I'm practicing, I'm expected to know. That is not true of the medical profession.
Which is a sad thing.
Well, the number one type of malpractice, which just, I mean, I had doctors do this to me, and I've turned them into the state medical board, and they're like, what the heck, you didn't die. Okay.
Yeah.
Is mismedication errors. Yeah. Honestly, you want to know what medication you should be taking and what really works and what's the best, talk to your pharmacist.
Yeah.
Talk to your pharmacist. I got a doctor, an endocrinologist, because I'm diabetic, so I got to really take care of myself. And so, you know, on top of that, I have a healthy brain, and I got a broken back. I had a torn rotator cuff. I used to be crazy, and I'm diabetic. Okay, so if I can do it, anybody can do it. But no, just like you said earlier, Mr. Pancakes, you can't sit on the freaking couch, pour Cheetos all over yourself, and eat those all afternoon, and wash it down with a beer.
Right.
So, you know, you got to take care of yourself. I think if somebody's going to walk away from this one right here that we're talking about for dads and parents and things like this, Google your human brain neuroscience and read for yourself. Go to my website. It's all free. It's kind of funny because I am going to get challenged on everything. I had a lawyer attack me just last month. He said that the brain inflames and it brain does not inflame, and here's the citations.
It
really
definitely does. Where do headaches come from?
Yeah.
What do you think the itis is wrong with Charlie Brown? I mean, come on. I mean, but you get attacked. The book that I wrote is like 276 pages narration and over almost 500 citations. Okay. Jeez. So my book's gonna read that.
Right.
Hey, I'm gonna get attacked on everything. So what I tell folks is, Don't let the facts get in the way of a good opinion.
Right.
That some guy at the bus stop told me this, Google it. And if you don't have a computer, go to the frickin' library and teach yourself. You spend 2 hours, I'll get this question, well, how do I learn about brain scans? Go to the Amen clinics. I don't get a commission. I don't get any money from that. I just help people. Go and spend a couple of hours. Take a sandwich. Read.
Do your own research.
And don't listen to, you know, some Billy Bob, you know, whatever, that published something about their kid or something. Yeah. But if they published something about their kid and they said, hey, I learned this at UCLA. This is what they're doing at The Ohio State University. This is what they're doing at New York University. Oh, yeah, boy, you got something there now. Because I'll tell you, and look to see who sponsored the study.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an important thing.
You'll always stay away from like media and stuff like that. Left wing, right wing, just stay away from it and look for actual facts. And then I always say, if there's a study, you definitely need to figure out who is the sponsor of the study.
Yeah. But these universities, I will tell you, right, Vanderbilt is one of my favorites, but I will tell you, Oxford, I mean, all over the world. It was actually the Danish. Who I think it was the Danes who discovered, I think, don't quote me on it, I have to go back and look, discovered the link between autism and cortisol. This is all over the world now. This is the last a lot of frontiers for the human body. But we are suffering so bad. I will tell you, we are raising a whole generation of antisocial people.
Yeah.
And we got to make sure our kids... Yeah. So girl gets home. It's like, okay, I felt so strongly about this. We live in Reynoldsburg, Ohio. It's not like anybody vacations there. Okay. We're on the side of Columbus, and the old Reynolds farm, I mean, old, a couple hundred years old. We bought our lot, a regular size lot, but we bought almost an acre behind it. I got a big red barn. It's really pretty cool. I like it. Big yard. And so we could go out there and play with the dog. We could go out there and enjoy some stuff. I play out there more than the kids do. They never really liked it too much, which I'm like, okay. But this outdoor activity, as soon as I say, you know, you get home, you should go ride your bike. What? But no, I got South Park on. I got, you know, something at Ren and Stimpy's. Something's, no, you got to go get your lungs filled. You got to go. I got one of my, I make buttons. You can probably see some of my buttons behind me. It's a bunch of smart ass buttons. And like, whenever I get mad, I make up a button. And make up one, it's got a little, my avatar on there, and it's me in a little farmer outfit, and it says, gardening, because murder is wrong. I gotta get out there, and I gotta go do my flowers. I like to plant my grass. I like to do stuff like this because I know it's good for my brain. I know, right. And I'll tell you, monthly massage. COVID was rough on me because it's like you can't get your massage now, and I get one a month.
Yeah.
Literally pushing the eustress chemicals into your body, oxytocin, all these great chemicals, and we've been raised with this John Wayne type of attitude. Well, tough it out.
Yeah.
Marines are tough. Navy SEALs are tough. And when I'll tell you, I'm volunteering to do these free podcasts for a group of vets because I'll tell you, we have 4 times more veterans killing themselves, suicide, back here in the United States than got killed in the war. Now think about that. Yeah. The way we train our soldiers, it's safer for them to go running into battle than to come home in the afternoon and watch Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
That's pathetic. And we know better. We know. Go, holy cow, if I can do this. I'm not a trained neurologist, but it's kind of funny. I've spent more time studying the human brain than it took me to graduate law school and graduate first in my class. I've spent more time. Yeah. I don't believe teaches you anything. No one teaches you anything. You go to school so that they tell you stuff, and I'll tell you right now, you got to spend another 3 or 4 hours outside of class learning what they gave you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everybody's their own way of doing things. My son going off to PT school, and my other son who went off and got his master's. It's like you go to class, but you are going to teach yourself. And that's why I was the most irritating student you would ever have. And it was in law school, and towards the end of the semester, my professor would always say, okay, does anybody have any questions? Mr. Warwick. Always have a question. I am paying you for my education. I paid for them all myself. So go out and hit the internet. Learn about the stress of bullying. Learn about the stress you can go to my website and read stuff and listen to the videos. You can go to UCLA. You can go to the Amen Clinics. There is more information out there now than there was 25 years ago, I will tell you, and you will be an expert in a month or two. You'll know what to do. Whether you'll do it or not is another thing, but you'll know.
Well, there's a whole lot to keep going on, and Scott, I've listened to several of your talks, and I know that literally, I think the first one of yours I've ever listened to was 3 hours long. So obviously... And the funny thing is that talk literally, I didn't realize it was 3 hours until after it was done and what's have you. But unfortunately, I don't want us to dive too long into this because, well, I have to get back to my 9 to 5 and get on a meeting.
Yeah.
But where can people find you if they want to reach out to you and be able to ask you questions, be able to start working with you? Where can they do so?
Yeah, I'm easy to find. Scott Warwick. .com, ScottWarrick.com, ScottWarrick.com. Very easy. You can shoot me emails. My email address is there. It's Scott@ScottWarrick.com. My phone number is there. I answer all my own emails. I don't have anybody screening them for me. I do that all myself. You can reach me through the website. It says contact Scott. I would suggest people go right to free resources. Best place to go. And hit the lunch and learn. And just go down there, and they're categorized by different areas. Like the ones I've done in the last 6 months are right there. And then in the bottom, there's a whole section on tolerance and diversity, about how we should treat each other like humans. And then there's another section on brain health, and those will keep getting added to all the time. And that will also give you resources to go and research other places. If you're really, really interested in the human brain, which in this country, we take better care of our feet than our brain. We spend more on our feet than we do our brain. I mean, I do not own a pair of Air Jordans, but I know that there's people out there who do, okay, and that'll date me. But you got to learn for yourself. And honestly, I'm at the point where it's like, I'm 63. I'll turn 64 at the end of this year. And my whole thing is I really want to try to help things get better while I'm still here and while I still got the energy to do it. And there's it all starts with self-care. It really does. It, you take care of yourself, you're going to be a better person to be around. You're going to be better for everybody in your life. And that's the biggest gift you can give your kids, is to teach them about their brain, because we don't think about it, you know, and we should. And we should. So, no, if somebody has questions, and I mean, I'll tell you, somebody has questions about the brain scans, first thing I'm going to tell them, go to Dr. Daniel Amen, just like Amen, A-M-E-N, and get yourself ready for a couple of hours. You've got to do your own research. Oh, my God, if you don't like reading, go to YouTube. Are you kidding me?
YouTube University.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I've got interviews that I like to listen to Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, Ted Williams, Willie Mays, and I'm just amazed. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get any work done at all, because I know I got it on my TV now, but you can learn. Yeah. My son changed the lock up in his room. It's kind of funny. He's going off to OU, which is only like 60 miles south of us, OU. So he changed the lock on his door so he can lock it so nobody can get into his room. Okay, so he did that, and I'm like, well, how did you know how to do that? And then right away, I'm like, oh, yeah, he went to YouTube.
Went to YouTube,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. How to rob a bank. How to not press them. I'm like, I'm amazed, you know. It's like, oh, everything is there. So neuroscience, brain health, UCLA, Vanderbilt University, some New York University. You're going to find some high-quality stuff out there. Yeah, it's easy.
Perfect.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. So, Mr. Pancakes, where do you want people to find you?
Yeah, you know, the usual, pancakesforyourdad.com. That's the main place. Has all of our links to all of my socials, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it, True Social, as well as LinkedIn. There's all the stuff on the website we use to help fund things like this show, equipment for the show, even finding more resources, because like you were saying, Scott, I'd have a resources page on my website too. It's minimal, but it's slowly building. The more money I get to be able to buy things and provide, or do research or spend time finding things to provide it to people for free as best as possible. But those are the best places to find them. And I'm able to take messages and emails from the website or any of the socials as well. So.
Cool.
Perfect. And of course, Call with Dads. callwithdads.com. We're on a lot of social medias, but the fact is that Call with Dads is the easiest place to find us. You can find our YouTube channel through there, our audio files, all this. This conversation with Scott is easily to be found there. So with that being said, I appreciate everyone being here. Scott, if you can hold on for us for just a second, this will be the end for everybody else, but we'll talk a little bit more.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thank you.